Good afternoon, ladies, and good afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome to this week's episode of Cover Your Six. I'm your host, Ron Easton. Been a hell of a couple of weeks, hasn't it? Last weekend, I was in Washington, D.C. for the Remove the Regime rally, which started out with a group of veterans at Union Station and ended up at the Lincoln Monument the next day with at least 20, 30,000 people doing a march down the National Mall. These are people who care about our country and what it has become. In the meantime, back at the White House, you had Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, known to have ordered the murder, the torture and murder and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi. You also have, as I like to call him, King Cankles, realigning America's personal interests. Because now, where we had England and Australia and other countries that we have had as allies for years, we're now aligning ourselves with El Salvador and Venezuela and all of these authoritarian regimes which Trump wishes he could be. Understand something. Your day will come, because between you and Pete Kegsbreath, who has ordered the murder of almost 100 people in the waters off of Venezuela, your days are coming. It is now rumored that Pete Kegsbreath ordered a strike on a boat and there were two survivors. What did he do? He ordered an additional strike to kill the two survivors. Think about that. Two men in the water, after surviving one strike, gets hit again. That goes against everything that this country stands for. Not to mention, we had the loss of two National Guard members. And one National Guard member, Sarah Beckstrom, I think her name is, she succumbed to her wounds. My condolences go out to those people. But bottom line is, they shouldn't have been there in the first place, because the courts had deemed the placement of National Guard troops in Washington, D.C. illegal. Folks, think about what's going on. He's attacking all security for people of the United States. Medicare going out the window. Healthcare going out the window. HUD, he's taking billions of dollars from HUD's budget for people who need that to sustain their life. These are people who are in dire need and depend upon HUD funds to live. Now, what does he want to do? Back in Vietnam, when they withdrew the troops out of Vietnam in 1975, they didn't want to take a lot of the South Vietnamese who helped us, who aided us, who were there as our allies. They're doing the same thing with the Afghanistan people. Yes, it was an Afghan who shot these two troopers. Now Trump wants to ban all Afghans. He wants to go back and denaturalize citizens. I've said this before. No president should have a body count. But between him and his inept, evil, abomination of administration, people are dying. Over 400,000 children have died in Africa due to the halt of the medication for AIDS and the food things that they needed. I'm so upset right now, I can hardly put my words together. And if you're not, you should be. To that end, tonight, I have three heroes. I have Michael Fanone, 20-year veteran of the Metro DC Police Department, who was there for the J6 insurrection. I have Harry Dunn, who was there for the J6 insurrection. I have Aguilino Gunnell, who was there for the January 6th insurrection. Oh, this is going to be a barn burner. Don't go anywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, as I promised, this podcast promises to be a burner. I promised three members of the Capitol Police Department, and I got two. I don't know where Michael Fanone is. Hey, Michael, if you hear me, where the fuck are you? We'll just start things off that way. So if he comes in, we'll let him in. But I have Officer Harry Dunn, a 15-year member of the Capitol Police Department, a member of the crisis team. He was a field training officer and a recipient of the Congressional Gold Medal and the Presidential Citizens Medal for service. I also have Aquilino Gonel, a native of the Dominican Republic. He came to the U.S. for a better life and just stayed strong. He was a member of the United States Army deployed to Iraq and then a member of the Capitol Police Department. Now, both of you guys are accomplished authors. Harry, you wrote Standing My Ground. How's that going?
I was so proud to do it, man. In fact, that's what I kind of played on words with my Substack publication that I do, Standing Our Ground. But it's going well. You know, regardless of just the book alone, I just love the fact that the title means something. It's a continuation. Not just a moment in time, right? Because we're seeing what's going on now in all aspects of life, that we need people to stand up and stand their ground. So I'm really happy with the choice of the wording of the book. But I'm really we'll get into the conversation a little bit more, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, each one of you during the hearings, I remember things vividly. And Aquilino, the one thing that I remember and I will never forget is your description of going home and your bride wanting to hug you and you pushed her off because you were covered in gas. And describe that moment, if you would.
I mean, you talk about it. Look, great to thank you for having me in your show. And first of all, and thank you for your service. On that day, it was very difficult, after being outnumbered and, injured by, the Trump supporters, those the same ones who claim to support the police. So I came home beaten, battered, bleeding from both my hands and injured on my foot and left shoulder. And not only was I injured, but I was also exposed to COVID because obviously those people at that time, they didn't believe in COVID restrictions, so they were not wearing any mask. So it was a nerve-wracking at the same time, infuriating and disappointing. It's a whole bunch of emotions at the same time because here's my wife trying to console me, trying to care for me, and she couldn't even do that because I knew if I let her to do that, then not only was she'd be exposed to the chemicals that I had on my clothes, but she potentially also get exposed to COVID and something that we didn't know a lot at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, a bag of emotions.
I understand. Now, Harry, the one thing that I will never forget about you, brother, is during your testimony, you made mention of the fact that as you were trying to protect these folks, they were calling you all kinds of racial slurs. And talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, no. I'm glad that people caught up on that. On the racial component that January 6th was. It's unfortunate that a lot of people with selective narratives that they wanted to push said that Officer Dunn made January 6th all about race. It's unfortunate that they did. Now, listen, I'm not going to say that January 6th was a racist event, but I'm confident saying that there were a lot of racists there. The reason why I say it's not a racist event, because my white coworkers, my Hispanic coworkers, the Asian coworkers got their ass whooped just as much as the Black coworkers did. So it wasn't like they were targeting out the Black people, but Black people had different battles. Like I'm sure Black and Brown people had battles where they're called telling desk to go, telling, you know, immigrants, people like Sergeant Gunnell, go back to your own country. But just the fact that they can, not only were they using their fist and baseball bats and OC spray and WD-40 bear mace, they weren't using just those as weapons. They were also using those words, which honestly are a lot harder to recover from than some of the physical injuries. You can't put ice on your feelings about being called the N-word or something like that.
You can say it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You can say it.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm not gonna give them power of that, you know what I mean? But it's real though. It's real.
And very real.
I mean, when you have this individual, like I have my gas mask on and a helmet, and through those, and a, you know, you can only see, basically you can only see my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And they are throwing racial slurs, epithets. Like, you know, you are a disgrace. You're not even an American.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, I served my country for 8 years. I went overseas and defended a democracy. That's what we were told, and that's what I did. And they didn't know that. They didn't care about that.
They didn't give a damn about that.
Yeah, they are making those accusations that I'm not even an American. And for a lot of those people that were there during that time, I'm sure that they had not done a speck of what I had done for this country.
Exactly.
23 years plus, I had dedicated myself defending this country, home and abroad. You know, just like the motto says, you know, against foreign and domestic. And yet, to them, I'm a traitor because I speak out, because we are a traitor, because we decide to try to hold people accountable and seek justice for what was done to us.
Let me ask you this. Now, here's a question that I've been dying to ask. And since you've already made point of the fact that you were Harry Dunn's supervisor, so I'm gonna go straight to the head of the horse here. What were your rules of engagement that day? Were you ordered not to discharge your firearms?
That's a false premise and a false
I'm saying that's
what they think. And so that's a false claim that Trump supporters claim that we were told not to. You know, we did not have a directive to say, hey, don't shoot, don't use your weapon. We had discretion to when we can and when cannot. But individually, but yet collectively, we decided to not to use it, because it'll have made things worse, especially like where I was in the tunnel, fighting against those people. That's where the most fearsome battle or fighting happened. You know, that's the only entrance and the only door that held on that day. And I was very close to using lethal force, because I was being trampled and being pulled into the mob, just like they did Michael Fanon.
Right.
And at that time, I didn't know him, but he was the one who relieved me. Within a minute or two, he was pulled out into the mob. So did I wanted to use it? Yes. Knowingly that would make things worse, I decided not to. And that's, I can only speak for myself. I don't know about Harry, but that's my assumption, that how we done that will have made things worse, because in my opinion, they were waiting for us. The mob was waiting for us to use lethal force, and we were waiting for them to use it. So it's kind of like being negating each other, because it was kind of like a wait and see.
I got you.
Because all those people had weapons in it. We just didn't know who had it.
I understand.
You know? And also, another thing, you got to realize, y'all served in the military. I didn't. Like I said, my father was in the service, my grandfather, so I'm familiar. I'm military adjacent, right, as far as understanding how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But with the police force, there aren't orders that say, hey, do not use your weapons here. Or like compared to with the military, hey, we're going into a non-hot zone or whatever the proper term is for it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have those orders or those advisories as a law enforcement officer. As a law enforcement officer, you are trained to use deadly force when appropriate, and only when you can articulate the facts that says, hey, I use deadly force because of this. Mm-hmm. So somebody standing right next to me maybe could articulate using his weapon, but I couldn't, or whatever. But everybody has to be accountable for why they did it, not just because, hey, it's a lot of people. Okay, what were the factors that led you down this road where you used your service weapon? So everybody has to account for that.
And in addition, like I could have deployed my weapon, but guess what? We are so close, in such a close quarters, that I might get a few rounds and then get overwhelmed and then have my weapon taken. Like, you're talking, I'm in the middle of the tunnel and fighting left and right, surrounded by these people who claim to support the police, being attacked by them. And one person who assault me raised their hand. I cannot engage them anymore because they're giving up per se, you know? So each bullet that comes out of my weapon, I'm accountable for it. They are not, because they were taking turns and doing rotation as to how to attack the police line, but we had to stay there. And once they raise their hand up, I cannot engage them anymore. You know what I mean?
Here's something that you guys damn near lost your lives that day. And of the, all of the people that were prosecuted and judged and jailed are now pardoned.
Yeah.
Harry, let me hear about it, brother.
You know, it's crazy, bro, because, I mean, if y'all recently, I'm sure you're very familiar with this, Ron, how you had Mark Kelly and Alyssa Slotkin and a couple other members who have served remind the troops, remind soldiers, hey, do not obey illegal orders.
Roger that.
And, I mean, that is literally the mission of soldiers. Like, I know plenty, obviously, you all too included, and I don't need to tell you all, but there are really people, you have trainings on how not to obey this illegal orders and how you're supposed to disobey. They have trainings on how to do that. And yeah, Donald Trump calling for those people, they're seditionists, and saying that they need to be dealt with accordingly. And we all know the penalty for sedition and treason is what?
It's death.
It's by death, exactly. Yeah. So Donald Trump, on January the 20th, the day he was inaugurated, pardoned many individuals who were convicted of sedition.
Amen.
So it goes to say that Donald Trump only cares about following the rule of law or enforcing the rule of law when you're doing it in his favor. So it's BS, and we've seen through it. Sergeant Gunnell, myself, Michael Fanone, Daniel Hodges, we campaigned our asses off for Kamala Harris because we knew that this
was coming. I know you did.
Like, we weren't surprised. Like, I Gunnell and I have talked. We weren't surprised that Donald Trump did it. He said he was going to. So that was one of the motivating factors for us getting out there, working our butts off to keep him from being elected. So it was a stab in the heart, and we knew it was coming, but it doesn't make it right. It's complete BS.
Well, you can't, you know, it's when you go through basic training, every boot that goes through training knows about the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It is in the UCMJ that it is your duty, your obligation to not obey an illegal order. And then to have people who have given most of their lives in service, Mark Kelly, as far as I'm concerned, the man is a fucking hero, okay? Let's be real honest about this.
Yep.
And then you want to bring your MAGA crowd and hang this man, which brings me to my point. Since you guys have been a part of this, and I know that you have received death threats, and I know that you have received some pretty nasty things your way, Akalina, how do you deal with the threats?
Look, you know, it's very despicable what they're doing, taking, you know, making a reminder to follow the law a crime. Let that sink to you. Me reminding, or Mark Kelly reminding people or other soldiers or military members to abide by the law is criminal to them. And on January 20, when he became president again, within minutes, after that. He pardoned the same people who attacked us, the same people who he sent over to overturn the election, and many of the people, officers who were protecting him on January 20th this year were officers who defended the Capitol on January 6th, 2021. And he didn't care. I'm sure that he didn't even say thank you or I'm sorry, because that's not him. It takes a real man as a real leader to, say that he was wrong and admit mistakes, but he didn't. Regarding the pardons, it felt more like a betrayal, not like a stab on the back or a slap in the face. It was a betrayal because we risk our lives. We put our bodies in front of the mob to give those elected officials a chance to escape the harm, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
So when those same elected officials turn around and support Donald Trump or say that nothing happened on January 6th,
yeah.
Well, nothing happened to who? To mm-hmm. them, nothing. To us, the officer, true. A lot.
That was going to be my next question. Do you feel betrayed by the members of Congress and the Senate?
From the Republican side, yes, absolutely. They can even get themselves to put up a plaque.
Yeah.
We had to restore to sue them to follow the law. Not me, but Harry and Danny Hodges. But, it takes a lot, because on January 6th, these same elected officials were running for their lives, not from hugs and kisses, but in fear for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't because of us, especially in the tunnel, where that was, the most fearsome fighting that happened and violent that we face, a lot of them would have gotten hurt. No question about it.
Yep.
And they couldn't probably escape the Capitol. Mm-hmm. That day. And they turn around and not only have they given comfort and support to those who attack us, but they had given reparations, settlements, restitutions, military honors to mm-hmm. Ashley Babbitt and her family, somebody that they were the attacker, and to the officers did not even have thank you. Because they didn't even want to sign up to give us the Congressional Gold Medal. So everything for the mob and his people, his supporters, and making us look as we were the attacker. So whenever they want to see themselves as victims, they call them political prisoners, hostages, unjustly mistreated people. And whenever they want to see them as heroes, they call them warriors, heroes, and patriots.
There you go.
If you take either of those narratives, then who are they fighting against?
Exactly. That was going to be my next question. Ashley Babbitt, who happened to be an Air Force veteran, so she knew better.
Yeah.
Okay. She was given a direct order, and she decided not to follow that order, so she got capped.
Ron, this is the deeper problem of what happened with January 6th. Yes, like there were some people that used the excuse they got caught up in the moment, they got caught up in the court, and there, you know what? There probably were some people who was like, "What the hell am I doing? All right, well, we're doing this. Let's go." There were, you know what? That's not an excuse, not defensible. Point blank, period. You made a mistake. You have to atone for it, period. However, Donald Trump, at that time, the president of the United States, the commander in chief of the strongest military in the world, so arguably the most powerful person in the world, said, go down to the Capitol and protest in my... He told them to.
Absolutely. So,
I don't know how you all are, but like if my mom tells me to do something, like mama say go.
Mama say go, you better go.
So it doesn't matter. I don't care if it's wrong. Mama said do this and I'm doing it because mama told me to. So Donald Trump, the most powerful person in the world, told them to go do this. So while they were beating us and while they were attacking the Capitol and storming it, trying to get in, we told them to go home. We told them to leave. They said, Donald Trump told us to come here. This is our house. This is the people house. So they felt like they had the authority to be there because they were emboldened by the most powerful man in the world, which is why it's such a slap in the face that Donald Trump has not been held accountable. Donald Trump is responsible for January 6th.
Amen.
Period. If he did not have that rally, if he did not tell the people to go, they would not have come.
Amen.
Period.
Amen. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more.
And that's what I used to tell the judges whenever I was attesting to what they had done to me on, you know, in federal court. I was assaulted and attacked by more than 40 people, and I'm being conservative. If you look at the videos and pictures and footage or not, you'll see that with a lot of people, and half of them only face, the charges. Judicial system, because the other half were either pardoned or were never identified. And when he pardoned those people on January 20th, my phone began blowing up by the prosecutors, the FBI agents, the Bureau of Prison, reporters, and everybody in my family as well, relatives, trying to warn me and see whether I take precaution, or just let me know, hey, X, Y, and Z person is being released. Do what you must. You know, take care of you and your family, because these violent people are out there now, affected immediately, and they feel emboldened because Donald Trump, despite pledging that he was going to go case by case, he gave them blanket pardons. And some of these people who received those blanket pardons, knowingly that they were criminals in the first place, had re-offended and had been sent back to jail or killed somebody or raped somebody or molested somebody or popped themselves off because there are that type of people. So all these people that he released, a lot of them end up going back.
Going back to jail. And it has been proven. Yeah. Harry, let me ask you this. I know that Sergeant Gunnell was dealing with PTSD before all of this happened. How are you dealing with the PTSD as a result of J6?
My anger consumes me, but it drives me to do work, to do the work. I have what I'm doing now. I ran for Congress. I quit and ran for Congress.
I saw that.
Right?
I saw that.
And then I lost. All right. Now what? I'm still upset. I still, okay, do I just go into a hole now and just hope that it gets better? What do they say? Look for work. What's next? So I started helping other Democrats that believe in democracy, that believe that what Donald Trump is doing is wrong, and helping them get elected. Obviously working with Kamala Harris, but several other Democrats across this country. And just doing the work. There's been rumors that I'm going to run for Congress again. I mean, if there's an opportunity and it makes sense, sure. If I am not, I'm always going to show up to where they need fighters, and I'm going to show up and meet that moment. So to answer your question in short, I took the long way to get there. I'm showing up, and Donald Trump needs to be held accountable. I thought that was prison. Now what that looks like now, with the Supreme Court saying that he's immune, that maybe that's not it. So, all right, what does accountability look like now? Maybe any and everybody who's ever supported them not get elected ever again. Maybe that's accountability.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm shifting my focus to. Because Donald Trump's not going to jail. We wanted it to. We had an opportunity to, but we failed that assignment as a country, as a whole. So now it's just about, all right, what now? What can we do now? And stopping any and everybody that supported him, making sure they don't win elections is what I'm focused on now.
Sergeant Gunnell, same question. How do you deal with the PTSD?
I'm going to piggyback.
I'm going to cut off Gunnell, and also talking to Gunnell and Mike and just yelling at those guys all the time, man.
Yeah, he does that quite sometimes.
It's not all hard work.
Hey. Yeah, run.
Yeah.
You keep your boys around you. Man.
What I do when he does that, I just put it on mute the phone and walk away from it, you know? And I come back, you do that. But, you know, I think accountability right now regarding Donald Trump is just watching his poll numbers plummet. You know, I think that's something that he despises. And he has this need to be liked by everybody else and then punish those who doesn't believe in his lies. And like he said, he likes dumb people because educated people know better. Anyway, regarding your question, dealing with PTSD this time around is a little bit different because not only do I already have a PTSD from the Army, but here is a different type of event, violent event that injured me not only physically, but mentally and morally. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're talking about me undergoing two surgeries, dealing with my PTSD, you know, that came back with vengeance because I did have to treat it, but it's a totally different animal when you're dealing with that. And one thing that you notice, you know, I don't know if you're familiar, but five of our colleagues died by suicide.
Correct.
And, you know, when things happen within the profession or organization, that is contagious. That is contagious because if you're in the borderline of doing something like that and somebody else go ahead and do that, you like might as well do it now because if not, I'm not going to do it ever. But the PTSD I deal with, I have been blessed that I have been able to recover most of my functions like I did, I was before January 6th, physically. So that allowed me to play a little more basketball. That was my go-to. I do have a mean step back and three pointer. If you want to challenge me, you might find yourself in a little bit of trouble.
No, brother. At 76 years old, I'm just going to take your damn. I'll tell you what. I'll send Harry Dunn in my place because I don't think you're going to shoot over
Harry.
I'm
not taking that charge.
Oh, okay. Oh my God.
Hey, my knees are bad. I'm good, man.
Okay. But, all right.
But the other thing that I think I struggle just like Harry is the outrage of all these things happening day by day where not only are these Trump officials and him acting tough about or talking, hey, if you do something, if you touch one officer, a federal agent, we're going to go after you and prosecute you to the full extent of the law and throw the key away. But meanwhile, you just pardoned more than 1,500 people that assaulted police officer violently on your behalf, and you let those people out.
Amen.
So it aggravates the PTSD, but also the moral injury, because at the end of the day, we did what he's asked those new officers now in this administration to do. And the only outreach that he ever had done to us is call us pussies when we were testifying because we were crying, because we were traumatized. We were still dealing with the PTSD, raw emotions. And that's the only outreach that he ever done to us. But meanwhile, he calls these people, we support the police and we are on the biggest supporter of law and order. Give me a break. You know, they're so disingenuous.
We all know that is absolute bullshit. So let's just call it what it
is. He only likes officers who do things
wants them to do. Exactly. Gentlemen, we are coming to the end, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate both of you. And I will put this out there. As far as I'm concerned, well, Aquilino, you're already family. You're military, but Harry, you're family, brother. You know, just by the, you know, you skin folk, as we call them.
Yes. So,
if there's anything that I can ever do for either one of you gentlemen, please don't hesitate to pop a flare.
Sure, but what I'm going to do is
ask Harry Dunn any parting words for America.
Well, two quick things, and I'll try to be as fast as I can.
No, take your time.
You know, I appreciate, I'm sure, like Sergeant Gunnell and, you know, Danny Hodges and Harry Dunn, myself and Michael Fanone. Everybody knows us. Everybody knows our names. Everybody knows our faces. There were so many hundreds of officers who opened and answered that challenge on January the 6th. And we were just four small pieces in a bigger picture that actually made it work. However, afterwards, our refusal to be quiet, our refusal to accept this as normal and okay is what I'm most proud about.
Amen.
I am proud of those guys, the ones that I just named, Sergeant Gunnell, for speaking up. There were so many people that answered the call that day.
Right.
But the call, the phone has been ringing ever since January 6th, January 7th, to whatever we are, whatever the hell today is right now. The phone is still ringing, and we need people to pick up the phone and answer that call. So I am so thankful for those individuals, Sergeant Gunnell, Michael, Danny, my friends, my brothers, and I'll go to bat with them any day of the week. But also, we need people, not just us, we need everyday Americans to show up and stop accepting this as normal or stop just saying, you know what, it is what it is, I give up, we can't do anything. We can do a hell of a lot when you show up. What they say, if you try to strike somebody with just your finger, it doesn't leave a strong blow. But those five fingers in a fist can deliver a hell of a blow.
You beat the hell out of them.
And we need a lot of people to show up and just unite and band together. And those are my fighting thoughts. So,
Roger that. Sergeant Gunnell, it's on you, brother.
Besides what Harry says, I think we need to remember that, you know, together we are stronger than divided. I think we also need to continue to be outspoken. And if you're not outspoken, if you're not outraged by what this administration is doing, the constitutional violations that he continues to do, then yeah, I don't know what to tell you. At this point, people need to gather together. The No Kings March, those type of rallies to remind Donald Trump and his administration that we are fed up with his agenda and his divisiveness and his violation of the Constitution. You need to show up, even if it is quiet, by just joining the rally.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to also support those who are outspoken, like Harry Dunn, Michael Fanon, myself, and you, Ron, and all those high profile people who are risking not only harassment but also the Trump administration legally when they defy their dissent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because apparently being dissenting is a crime now that him and his administration want to punish you and put you through whatever system process they deem necessary just so you could back down. But do support those who are spoken, and thank you for your service. Thank you, everybody who's listening. If you can contribute, find us on social media and all the platforms that we have, that we use our voices, and subscribe if you can. Sergeant Aki Go is my handle name for most of my social media. My book, American Shield, The Sergeant Who Defended Democracy, is also available in various form, audio, and when you name it, whatever. Those are the things that you could do, little things that you could support. Us and Harry Dunn, his book, Michael Fanon, his book. We are out there speaking, telling our story so people know in this, whatever we went through, doesn't happen again ever.
I will say this. My Spanish is extremely poor, but I had a maid teach me, muchas gracias por todo.
De nada, mucho gusto, Ron.
Sí, you guys, people use the word heroes and banter, it all around, but in my book, you guys are national heroes.
Thanks, man.
And don't ever let anybody tell you any different. Ladies and gentlemen, when I wanted to establish the Ring of Honor, my sole purpose was to honor individuals that leave an enduring legacy. Some are military, some are civilians, and just everyday people. I know you don't normally hear one man say that I loved another man, but I loved my friend Jelly Bean Johnson. His mother brought him to Minnesota from Chicago, the west side of Chicago, when he was 13 years old, so that he wouldn't be recruited into the gangs. And man, what he did here was unbelievable. He taught himself how to play drums. And then with his thirst for knowledge, because here in Minnesota, there was only like 4 hours where you could listen to R&B music. He had to listen to other music. So he developed a taste for rock and roll. So he taught himself to play guitar. He ended up as the drummer for Morris Day and the Time, national act. One of the kindest individuals that I've ever met in my life. He could have left Minnesota and made hundreds of thousands of dollars, but he decided to stay here. And he has mentored hundreds of musicians. It was not unusual to go to a little hole-in-the-wall bar and see Jelly Bean standing in the corner and sitting in with the band, encouraging band members to be the best that they could be. On November 21st of this year, I lost my friend, Jelly Bean Johnson, and my world is shook. For 25 years, I have known this man, and I have loved this man. So I'm going to close out this Ring of Honor with an interview that I did with Jelly Bean on my first attempt at a podcast. And I want you to listen to his very, very words. Rest in peace, Jelly Bean Johnson.
If you were going to give any advice to young musicians, what would it be?
Just follow your heart, man. If you know, first of all, music ain't for everybody. You know, it has to be in your blood. You have to feel it. You have to feel it in your heart. You know, and if you do, then you go after it. You know, you stay to your thing and you go for it. You know, but if not, you know, and I say that because you know I have certain you know family members that you know I bought them guitar lessons and put them through, you know, got them listen to all that, and it didn't stick. So that's a prime example. You know, you got to want to, you know, to do this, to be a musician. And if you do, then follow your heart and do it.
You know, you do.
Otherwise, you know, and if you don't, then we need doctors. We need all kind of other things you can get into.